Today's guest is Dr. Mary Njeri Kinyanjui, is a retired researcher at the Institute for Development Studies.
Wagwan, everybody. Welcome to the This Afemi History podcast, where we'll be speaking about history and as well family history and how history relates in terms of Caribbean people for the present as well as in the past, and how in the past, what that does and brings forth for what we are going through at present and what we can learn from our history, from our family, and take that moving forward. So I do hope you enjoy the podcast. And if you like it, please ensure to subscribe, like, and review. Thank you.
Small business for close to that years. And I would move from one town to another in Kenya or within East Africa, in Uganda, in Malawi, in Tanzania. And I found common similarities among the market traders. And during my work, we used to train the business people to grow. We would train them to adopt entrepreneurial skills. We would train them on the need to get finances. We would train them on just to make them entrepreneurs and make their business grow. But after some time, I realized that the businesses were not changing, the markets were not growing vertically as expected, they were not changing and adopting the skills that we were training them, the change that we expected. So I started wondering, what if we rephrase the question, what is the raison d'etre, I don't know how to pronounce it in French, the raison d'etre of these markets? What drives them? Instead of wanting to change them, why don't we understand their internal organization and the mechanisms and the way they operate? So I started thinking about it deeply and thought, is there a way we could understand these markets? Then I also had my own internal contradictions as a researcher, student of development, and a subject of development. As a subject of development, I had to do my own housing. I had to provide my own transport. I had to live. At the same time, I was studying development. How do I balance the two? How do I resolve my crisis? At one time, I'm telling people you should be developed. At the other time, I'm living in rented houses. And I started looking forward to my retirement. And I saw my post-retirement experience would be either I would run a small business or I would go back to my village and start doing peasant farming. So essentially, I would be doing the things that I was telling people were not needed to change, because that's the only way to survive. Because according to neoliberal issues, my salary was kept low because we are a labor surplus economy and I could hardly subsist. So I started now asking myself questions. How do I live? What should I do? And how do I resolve these contradictions? Then the other thing was that I had observed two markets in my neighborhood. In my neighborhood on Thika Road, there were two markets. One is called Roiro and the other one called Githurai. And within the span of 15 to 20 years, these markets had grown in voluminous in terms of number of people operating, in terms of goods. And I started thinking, this is not just out of chance. There must have been a driving force. Then, one time during my commission research, which we used to do at the Institute for Development Studies, I went to a market in Mombasa, and I was with my questionnaire asking the women, how do you do this business? And they just stared at me. Then one of them recognized me and told me, I know you. Are you so and so? And she told me, we were together in high school in Mogoiri in Murang'a. Can you remember me? I used to be called Bernadette Nyambura. And that's when she told me, keep your questionnaire aside. I tell you the story of the market. And that's when she told me how the market operates as a collective, how the women organize the trading, how they set regulations, how they brand the rice, how they package and clean. So I realized that unless you have good connection and you know the people you are dealing with, you'll never know the truth about the market. So finally, as a researcher and trainer of development, I had realized there was little change that is taking place to neoliberalism in the African markets. The markets were adapting at their own pace. They were adopting what they want, and they had long. And that drove me to the archives to start finding out the oldest market in Kenya. And that's when I went to the archives and found out that when the colonialists were sharing space in Nairobi, they did not give Africans space. They gave the Arabs, the Europeans, and the Asians. They allowed them spaces to construct shops and businesses. But for the Africans, were given open spaces which were temporary or they were supposed to move out. So I realized that those spaces where the Africans used to trade long before colonialists were the ones that have evolved to the current today African markets, but they have been sidelined by policy.
So thank you. So basically, these African markets are more community-based in terms of how they are supported, how they support each other, and how they rely on each other. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, they support each other. They invite each other into the jobs. For example, you find that people will be closely related by their places of origin. If I'm from a certain village, I may invite people from my village to come in and trade with me. So they are closely related.
Okay. And so for the Ubuntu, this business model, can you just kind of, I know that it's very community-based, but what were are the, I guess, your key principles and characteristics that you got from your research from this?
For me, I say it's an Afrocentric business model which dates from medieval times. I don't know whether you have heard about the Trans-Saharan trade, where people used to practice market type of business, Sofara market trade. People would leave salt and gold and trade on all those things. So it dates from that time. It's the space where African exchange goods through barter, that's how they used to do it. But later they adopted the currency money to trade in. And the principal characteristics that I have found in this Utu Ubuntu Afrocentric model is self-reliance, that you don't rely on somebody to employ you. I don't know whether people in Europe and North America would understand this because they grew up seeing your father working for somebody else, or working in a factory, working in a shop, working in everybody. But for someone like me, I saw people working on their farm for themselves. I saw people working in the market for themselves. They were not employed. So they rely on themselves to generate their own jobs, to generate their own work, to generate their own goods. So that's one principle. The second principle I have observed is sharing space. You find that in a market space, people selling tomatoes will be seated at one place. They'll be trading in tomatoes, without minding next to who. They'll be trading with each other. And if one is not, goes to perform an errand, the other person will stand instead of them and trade for them. So that kind of thing, the sharing, is something that you don't find in other business. They'll buy each other out. For example, if I'm a trader, I'll be trying to buy my neighbor out to grow my business and control. And the other thing I found out that business is a way of life. It's not something you do today, tomorrow, or that. You are born and you grow, mature into business, and finally you die. It's not like here where you start working, then you work for years, you are laid off without caring what happens next. You are laid off because they want a leaner company to make more profit. So business is a way of life for you, and you have to continue with it. The other principle I have found out is that there is no separation between labor, production, and consumption. You work for yourself, you produce for yourself, and even if I'm selling cabbage, I'll consume the same cabbage that, and even sometimes the money I make from the business, I'll use it to buy food in the evening. So the three are tied in between. So in this case, they synthesize business and livelihoods. The two are together. So whenever a decision is being made to lay off or to continue with business, one has to think, what is the livelihood likely to be? The other thing I found out is the radical determination and courage that people have. You find that they'll sit under the most difficult conditions. That's why you have some people writing about decent work, about precariousness, but they don't look at the radical determination these people have to remain in that job. Then the collaboration and competition, which I've mentioned there, they'll collaborate at the same time, complete. Then there is what I call solidarity, entrepreneurialism, where they'll share risk. When you spread your tomatoes on one space, you are sharing risk with your neighbors at the same time, and they share transaction costs like transport, space, security, water, and sanitation. And then finally, there is the pooling of money and resources. You find that in the evening, they might contribute 100 shillings, that's like $10 or $20, which is all put in a kitty as for a rosca or falling to other people. Those are the kind of characteristics that I have observed.
No, thank you. So it's not an individualistic as it would be here in the West, but more or less, as as you've indicated, everyone relying on each other, each one teach one type of a principle for this this business model. Now, would you be able to give a particular case or an example of how the Ubuntu business model operates in practice?
Yeah, there are many cases how it operates, where they build individual agencies. For example, in the markets, I have said you may find people who have organized themselves and they have bought plots of land, distributed among themselves, and built their own houses. So they build individual agency by coming together as a community and making purchases, and then they share out. So in this case, you find that there are even towns in Kenya which have evolved out of African markets. In central Kenya, the towns are like Roiro, Githurai and Karatina. These towns have evolved because of the presence of African markets. There are no industries like we understand in the theory of urbanization. Here, the markets have been central for the growth of these towns. I have also documented cases of specific women who have worked in the markets, educated their children. They have been successful, bought land, built houses, and survived. And I have documented those cases of women. So I have been trying to build up this case of Utu Ubuntu to show that really people follow a certain way of doing things and they resolve problems. For example, in the neighborhood where I live, most of the people are traders. In Nairobi, they are traders. So, and they, I never thought they had contributed so much to the city formation by buying land as a group, subdividing and building.
For that. So, in what ways does the Utu Ubuntu business model differ from the conventional Western business model? I know you've mentioned a couple of things, but what would be the advantages that it offers?
Advantages is that it allows people to enter into a mode of production and exchange who would not otherwise have done it. And the other thing is that business is a way of life. You have something to do. And the way it also differs from conventional Western models, the lack of separation between production, labor, and consumption. It also differs in terms of pooling of resources among the traders. It differs on that. It differs from Western group. Then building individual and group agency. For example, where you work as a pharmacist, they expect you to go there already trained, that you have invested in yourself. And if you are to grow, you further invest yourself so that you can be more productive to the company. But In the case of the market traders, they'll support each other in so many ways to build each other. If you have a wedding, if your son is graduating, if you have a funeral, they'll come to your support, you But in these other types of businesses, it's your own business. There is no that utu. Utu means humanness. You bring your whole self, you bring your whole spirit, you bring your religiosity, your culture into the business. But you can see the conflicts that are coming with the issues of. Sometimes I don't understand them, but I see a lot of controversy around diversity and, So in this, in the market, you bring your diversity, you bring everything, your culture, your celebration, everything, you bring it into the market. So the market is a complex, I must say it's a complex ecosystem that needs further understanding. And one of the problem I have is that this research I have been doing, it has not been funded. So I've been struggling to carry out the research and come up with the model.
Now, again, I know that you've mentioned this part of this is before in terms of with the concept of the Ubuntu influence in terms of the business practices and the relationships and the decision making. Can you just
One thing we observe is that businesses grow horizontally, they don't grow vertically. That is, you find more and more people getting in and then diversifying to buy animals, to chicken, to buy goats. So they grow that way to buy plots, to take care of parents, to take care of children. So that's the kind of diversification they have because of the interdependence that people have. You may find that your brother's children have no school fees, so you are forced to go and pay school fees for them. You may find that your aging parents need medical care because you feel you have to pay the debt that your parents in the debt to your parents because they brought you up, then you take care of them. The other thing I find is that they don't buy each other out. It is an inclusive model. If today I want to go to the Royal Market to trade, I'll just organize with the market traders and buy my carrots and put them in a spot, and then I start trading. And they are bound together as a community by blood relationship, by home, same home origin or estate. Then they set regulations to govern the self and the community. And most of the decision making is very democratic. I have attended some of their meetings and observed how they discuss their issues. Like in one meeting at a market called Uhuru Market, they were discussing how to start a saving and credit organization. And the meeting took the whole afternoon until everybody was convinced on the importance of the saving and credit. It's not like our meetings where we have a written agenda and then we have to be finished by this time and by this hour. So themselves, they go through a process of back and forth. No, it's not like this. And they discuss and discuss until people arrive at a decision. And in another marketplace, they even sign MOUs on how to hold elections. They discuss, for example, if you are from a given tribe, there is no intertribal competition between the people being voted in. If it is a seat like a secretary, all the people standing for the secretary post must be from one tribe. So, in this way, they have unique ways of dealing with issues, which I would have wished to advance more in.
Now, you've mentioned a lot of terms of, with the cooperation with the community aspect. Has there, in your research, has there been any challenges or barriers of implementing the Ubuntu business model and how that can be addressed?
Most of it is based on trust.
Yes.
And sometimes some people take advantage of trust. So, like in every community, there are people who take advantage of the trust and break the trust. And there is no way of punishing them except shaming and isolating them. The other challenge is the lack of policy support. Because government and international development partners don't believe that African markets are a way of business, there is very little support given to them except wanting to change them. They are also not allocated space. There is also overcrowding. They are also viewed negatively as primitive and backward. So you find that you often see stories in the newspapers, somebody saying, I have a degree, but I'm working as a market trader. I have a degree, but I'm hawking maize, which shows that it's like those people who do these things are less human, are subhuman. So, because of this, those are the main challenges that I have seen.
Now, again, just I guess what would the role of, I guess, the cultural values and traditions and norms that really play in shaping the Ubuntu business model. Would you be able to speak a little bit more as to what you haven't spoken to already?
From sayings and proverbs. There are many proverbs that express independence, that express self-reliance, that express social relationships. There are also, if you look at the pooling of money, traditionally, people used to have what they called rotational labor pools. You work on somebody's farm today, and then you work on someone's farm the next day until you finish the rotation. There were also gifting systems where, like, either, let's say, somebody has delivered a baby, the women would gather together and gift the person. They'll bring firewood, they'll bring water, they'll bring bananas, they would pound maize to make porridge. They'll do so many things. So these things have been what James Altucher says have been acculturated to neoliberalism. They have been adapted. And they have been transformed and explained, and apps have been developed to support them. So it's a whole lot of systems that from sayings, from proverbs, from songs, from rituals. And for example, I don't know, especially in the Catholic Church, when the church was dwindling, they had to adopt the African way of worship, bring the drum, the vibrancy, the songs, incorporate many rituals to make the mass different. So this also happens in so many things, but it has not been explored.
Finally, as we wrap up, how do you envision the future of the African market and the potential impact of the Utu Ubuntu business model on economic development and prosperity in the region?
First of all, the UN adoption of the concept of social and solidarity economy is a boost to the model because they'll be looking. I hope they won't assume that the ground is a tabula rasa like they always assume. And this will show that already there has been something in existence. The other thing is that most counties in Kenya are now building market spaces for women. The other thing I envision is more activism on Afrocentric business model. We have had activism on Afrobeats, on Afrodress, on Afro cuisine. But we have no activism on Afrocentric business models. So that's something that we need. And Caroline Hossein of University of Toronto has been doing this work on Roscas. So I believe with a combined effort, this will be resolved. Then African markets are also adapting to new technologies. Salome Kemani, in her PhD thesis at Queen Mary University Department of Geography, observed that market traders are creating WhatsApp groups where they trade and share information. I don't know whether you know how to use the WhatsApp for group formation. Yeah, so they are adopting groups. We also need more activism to make bureaucratic and neoliberal institutions to change their perspectives about Afrocentric businesses. They should take time to understand them. Let's shift away from the modernization and Conrad's perspective of stories of darkness and start appreciating that there is an Afrocentric business model, which it still needs understanding. It still needs activism. And I hope that I've been helpful.
No, definitely, because it gives a different perspective on it and to know more about it. I know that you mentioned about some modernization in regards to with the, let's say, the WhatsApps group, but I know in Kenya they have what's called the M-Pesa. So that is being used as well to in terms of exchanging funds for purchase of services.
But you know, even why the M-Pesa succeed in Kenya is because people help each other a lot. M-Pesa would not work here in the US.
Yes.
because like you don't send your brother money. But in Kenya, I'll be sending my brother's money. And that's why M-Pesa works, because I'll be sending lots of people bits and pieces of money. It worked because there was already a fabric for sharing money.
No, and I know that you mentioned about as well, Dr. Hussein, about the Roscas, because she's looking at I guess from a Caribbean perspective, for what they use in terms of let's say a partner or a susu to collectively come together to be able to assist each other when they pool their funds together in a rotating distribution of funds. So. But I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and to speak about this because it's very similar to some marketplaces in the Caribbean in terms of how they are as well are managed and how it is a community to be. So thank you so much.
Hoped you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please make sure to like, follow, subscribe, and write a review for the episode wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you.